ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 नमः पंकजनाभाय नमः पंकजमालिने नमः पंकजनेत्राय नमस्ते पंकजंग्रे
Word by words yesterday, so we'll just read the translation and then move to the Srila Prabhupada's purport explanation of this verse. So here's the translation. I'll read it one time, then please repeat after me. My respectful obeisances unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, and whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. Please repeat. My respectful obeisances are unto you.
My respectful obeisances are unto you.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Whose abdomen is marked with a depression.
Whose abdomen is marked with a depression.
Like a lotus flower.
Like a lotus flower.
Who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers. Whose glance is as cool as the lotus. And whose feet are engraved with lotuses. What do you remember? Without looking, what do you remember from that? From the verse?
The stomach is depressed. A bit like lotus.
Yes.
Then is
wait, one thing. Just one thing. We have to allow others their chance too. Okay? You're so enthusiastic. Thank you. Anyone else remember something? Oh, no, look now. Who remembers something else from that verse? Excuse me? A garland. What kind of a garland? What was it made out of? Does anyone remember? A lotus. Yes. So Krishna's abdomen, his navel, has a depression that's compared to a lotus flower. And he's wearing a garland of lotus flowers. What else from the verse? Yes. His glance is as cooling as the lotus flower. And indeed, many of the devotees, they pray, let your merciful glance fall upon me. Now, if you put that together with this point that his glance is as cool as a lotus flower and his eyes, netraya, his eyes are like lotus because the lotus petal is shaped something like this, and Krishna's lotus-like eyes, they're shaped just like that and they go almost to his ear, so he has big, beautiful lotus petal shaped eyes, and they're as cooling as the lotus flower. And why did the devotees pray that Krishna's merciful, Krishna places merciful glance upon him, on them? Is because why? Because everyone is burning in this world in the fire of material life. Samsara dava nalalita loka. It is a forest fire. The specific qualification or characteristic of a forest fire is that it destroys everything. Conflagration is the English word that describes the forest fire, how it just simply destroys, it turns everything to ashes. Now, although it does conflict with our sentiments about the things that we are attached to in the material world, really, everything simply will be turned to ashes in time by the forest fire, conflagration of material existence. So although we can't exactly go through our life thinking, if we're, say, if we're living in the world or something, how can we go through life thinking, well, what's the use of doing anything because it's all completely useless? We can't go through life like that, and it isn't completely useless, but yet we should know the very temporary nature of everything in material existence. The good, the bad, it's all temporary, and we have to live our life to some degree in that perspective. And Krishna's cooling glance can remove the distress that the forest fire of material existence inflicts upon everyone. It inflicts that forest fire or pain upon everyone, and everything gets turned to ashes. And now the interesting thing about Krishna's cooling glance, when the devotees pray, "Let your glance be upon me, O Krishna," it's the opposite of what we usually think of. When we pray, not a cow moo, I can recognize ordinary phone sound. It's an imitation old-fashioned phone. We want cow moos. Yes? Yes. So, we tend to want, we come to the temple to see the deities, but this isn't what Kunti Devi is saying. She's saying that Krishna's glance is cooling, so the operator of the action, so to speak, is Krishna, his glance. And the recipient of the action, the one who receives the action, is us. So we come to the temple actually to receive the merciful glance of the Lord, not for Him to receive our merciful glance and our desiring glance, or our needful glance. We come to be seen by Him, and we trust that if somehow Krishna places His beautiful cooling vision upon us, that will solve all problems, and the problem of material life, of the conflagration, the forest fire of material existence, is that we are not receiving the merciful glance of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that there is only one lack in this world, and that is a lack of Krishna consciousness. That this is what Shraddha, Vishwas, or faith means, is that if I become Krishna conscious by the mercy of Krishna and His merciful glance, that all problems will be solved. And that, on the other hand, that there is no situation, material solution to the problems of material life, because the problems of material life are essentially a spiritual problem, not a material problem. Very hard to see like this. And that the object of our activities is not to see Krishna, but to be seen by Krishna. Therefore, the devotees, even when they're sitting in front of the deities, they tend to sit beside Tulsi Devi, because Krishna's glance will go to Tulsi Devi. And if they are near Tulsi Devi, maybe Krishna's glance will also simultaneously fall upon them. Because Krishna's glance is merciful, it is cooling. So, your glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with the lotus. And wherever Krishna walks, and where does Krishna walk without shoes? I'll give you a hint. It is not Dwarka. And it is not Mathura. Because there, he's a king's son. When you see someone walking around without shoes, not so much here, but in India, you think, oh, this is a village boy. Yes, Krishna is a village boy. And when he walks without his shoes in the village of Vrindavan, his footprints are like everywhere. And that is the speciality of the dust of Vrindavan, why the devotees, even when Prabhupada really shocked the devotees in one sense, in 1969, when Prabhupada was in the Los Angeles temple, and then Mataji came from Vrindavan. Indeed, Mataji came from Vrindavan and she did kirtan in the temple, and Prabhupada allowed her to chant Krishna's names in the temple. And then she offered Prabhupada a little container that had Vrindavan dust in it. And Prabhupada took that and went and put that dust in his mouth. And all the devotees went, wow! Because generally we don't do that when we see dirt or dust. We take it and put it in our mouth, rather we sweep it away. So the devotees were amazed that Prabhupada had done this, and he was honoring the dust of Vrindavan. But you honor it by taking it and placing it upon our head, or taking a little, because the dust of Vrindavan has been touched by the lotus feet of Krishna. And Krishna's feet are marked with the lotus flower. And what else are Krishna's lotus feet marked with? Excuse me? A flag which signifies victory for the devotees who have taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Victory over the mind, or actually the goad, what is the goad called? How do you say it? Ankush. The ankush on Krishna's lotus feet signifies the devotee's ability, by Krishna's mercy, by serving Krishna's lotus feet, is the devotee's ability to control their minds. And the chakra on Krishna's lotus feet, please let me give senior a good sitting place, respected devotee. So the chakra means that the devotee will be victorious over his enemy. The devotee who takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet will be victorious over his enemy. You like that? Yeah. And then our acharyas, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, defines who the enemies are. And it is not the person who's giving us trouble over there. It's lust, anger, greed, illusion, like that. Madness, envy, these are the enemies. These are actually the enemy. And the chakra on Krishna's lotus feet destroys that. And there's also a pentagon, five-figured. And then there are lotuses, and then there are, I used to know them all. A half moon, yes. What else? Anyone? Water pot. The acharyas describe that one of the things that Nanda Maharaj did on Krishna's birthday, by the way, because this is a very auspicious thing, is to get a fish and release it and give it its freedom. Next birthday, you could see if you could talk your mother and pitta into that. It's considered very auspicious. So everything about Krishna is so delicate and beautiful, and he's so beautifully effulgent. He is like a monsoon cloud, not like a monsoon cloud exactly, but this is called Chandrasaka Nyaya. It's something like this, because we have to be able to conceive of him with our very limited material mind. We have to try to conceive of him. So he's like a monsoon cloud. He's not like anything of this world, but a monsoon cloud shining with the effulgent sun behind it. So darkish and yet so effulgent, and soft as a lotus, and reddish in different parts of his body like a lotus, and his eyes are so beautiful, and his hair is curling, and beautiful Krishna is standing right in front of Kunti Devi, and he's about to leave, go back to Dwarka. And he's mounted the chariot already. And he's about to leave. And she loves him. And she's fully dependent on him. And what can she do to stop him? She can't stop him. She can only offer her prayers and plead with him to please stay. It is intolerable for her to be separate from Krishna. Why? Because of sambandha, the loving relationship she has with Krishna. So let's hear what Prabhupada says. Some very powerful points here, so please listen carefully. And at the end of, there's a few sections here, so at the end of each section I might ask if anyone remembers something from what they heard. So therefore we should listen attentively. This is what we would all long for, in a sense, is to sit at Prabhupada's lotus feet and hear the words emanating from his mouth, because they come from the spiritual level, spiritual platform. So here's what Prabhupada says in his purport. Here are some of the specific symbolic marks on the spiritual body of the personality of Godhead, which distinguish his body from the body of all others, the bodies of all others. They are all special features of the body of the Lord. The Lord may appear as one of us, but he is always distinct by his specific bodily features. So there's the first point. That Krishna may appear, he performs his Naralila, and his activities may be quite similar to the activities of any human being, but his bodily features and of course his activities and his potencies really indicate that he is completely different than we are. We are tiny and insignificant, and he is unlimited and all powerful and all beautiful and all knowing, completely different. And everything in existence rests upon him, including ourselves. So he is completely different. So there's the first point. Now, Srimati Kunti claims herself unfit to see the Lord because of her being a woman. She had mentioned that before, that you are here, only one who has separated material themselves from material existence, has refined their consciousness to the degree that they're able to perceive themselves different, completely separate from anything materially connected to them. That is refined, purified consciousness. And Kunti Devi, thinking of herself incapable of doing that because of her being a woman, we'll continue. This is claimed because women, sudras, the labor class, and the dvijabandhus, or the wretched descendants of the three higher classes, are unfit by intelligence to understand transcendental subject matter concerning the spiritual name, fame, attributes, form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Did your false egos get pinched when you heard that? Did you feel a twinge in your false ego? Wait a second. Does that mean, did you feel it? No one's answered. Yes, you did, yes. Okay, how about the other one? Sutras. Sutra means that that you're working for someone else. Anyone in that category? Did your false ego get pinched when you heard that sutras are incapable? No, because I'm not like that. This is somebody else. Wretched descendants of the higher three classes. Well, that did hurt a little bit. I have to admit it. I mean, I'm bad, but am I wretched? Well, if I'm attached to, do you feel wretched? If I'm attached to this world and things in this world, I'm misusing, this is the point here, I'm misusing a higher birth. So if we feel pinches of, if I'm attached to anything of this world and not under, thinking about my future births very seriously, I'm a wretched descendant of a higher class or a sudra or whatever. So that means we're not able to extract our consciousness from the realm of matter by the power of intelligence, which is by the power of intelligence. And our process of extracting ourselves from the realm of matter is actually not by use of intelligence alone. Intelligence can be helpful, but it is not the process of Jnana Yoga. And the processes of Jnana Yoga very much described throughout the Bhagavatam's and especially in the 11th canto and Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. They are very useful to support bhakti, but they are not bhakti. They can support the growth of our bhakti, but they are not bhakti. They are called sangha siddha bhakti. While the processes of direct bhakti means that they're in contact with bhakti, they can be considered part of bhakti. But bhakti itself is chanting and hearing sravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, like that, worshipping the deity in the proper consciousness. In the proper consciousness, in the consciousness of not wanting anything of this world, or even liberation from this world, but just Krishna and Ashivanam, cultivating the devotion to Krishna, cultivating the giving of the self to Krishna. Why the giving of the self to Krishna? I heard Srila Prabhupada speak recently that some person said this sharanam or sharanagati was too much to ask by Krishna. Did anyone ever hear that lecture where Prabhupada mentioned that? He says, he was quoting some sophisticated person saying, that's too much to ask, the giving of the self to Krishna. But actually, the soul, the self, me, it's in every one of us. This is our natural constitutional position. We are meant to extract ourselves from the identification with matter, body, mind, and extended body and mind, meaning what is mine. Unless we do this, we cannot give ourselves to Krishna purely. And the methodology of doing that is to place ourselves in bhakti, is to place ourselves continuously in Krishna's association, wishing to serve him. And look at Kunti's position. She had been in Krishna's association, and now he was leaving, personal association, now he was leaving. And this was causing her the greatest fear and the greatest distress. But the process of, because the process of bhakti is to keep oneself always in Krishna's association. And therefore Kunti's later going to say that I prefer the distress when you are with me to freedom from distress when you're absent from me. That's the position that she places being with Krishna. The highest position, the highest goal. And that is the great opulence of Kali Yuga. That it bestows unlimited distress. Srila Jiva Goswami actually says that, describes this in one of his comments, maybe Kala Doshinate Rajanasti Ekomagunatisanade, but Kali Yuga is so full of faults that it bestows the ability to, it makes Krishna so available through the holy name. At any time, any place, you can be with Krishna by chanting his holy name. And distress is what pushes us. This is the engine that drives people to Krishna in Kali Yuga in one form or another. This engine is all pervasive in Kali Yuga because of passion and ignorance being so pervasive in Kali Yuga. So the holy name is always there for us. Always there for us. Just think. That's why that verse, what verse? Tadasi tadakripa, by your mercy, Bhagavan mamapi, by your mercy, you're giving me an opportunity to always be with you through your names, but to daivam idri samihanan. It's my misfortune that I have attraction to so many things, but I don't have attraction to that. I'm so much, myself is so much intertwined, entangled, intertwined with the material energy, and I cannot extract it by my means of intelligence. Then I'm attached, I'm thinking my self-interest is where it isn't. So that's very unfortunate. So Kunti Devi says here, I'm incapable, so that lack of feeling of incapability, excuse me, the lack of feeling of capacity, capability to be with Krishna turns out to be the greatest fortune, as we will see, because it leads to full dependence on Krishna's mercy. So Prabhupada keeps on explaining, such persons, excuse me, they're unfit by intelligence. That never says unfit, but unfit by the power of their discriminating intelligence. These three categories are unfit by their intelligence to understand transcendental subject matters concerning the spiritual fame, name, attributes, form, etc. of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such persons, although they are unfit to enter into the spiritual affairs of the Lord, can see him as the Archavigraha, meaning here, the deities, who descends on the material world just to distribute favors to the fallen soul, including the above-mentioned women, sutras, dvijabandhus. Because such fallen souls cannot see anything beyond matter, the Lord condescends to enter into each and every one of the innumerable universes as the Govardhakshai Vishnu, who grows a lotus stem from the lotus-like depression in the center of his transcendental abdomen. And thus Brahma, the first living being in the universe, is born. Therefore the Lord is known as Pankajanabhi. The Pankajanabhi Lord accepts the Archavigraha, his transcendental form, in different elements, namely a form within mind, a form made of wood, a form made of earth, a form made of metal, a form made of jewels, a form made of paint, a form drawn on sand, etc. So Krishna kindly comes to this world to accept our devotion in a way that we can see him despite our lack of qualification for seeing him. please snore quietly. You'll wake everyone else up. No one likes to sleep when there's people snoring. That's the one thing good about going giving class. Not the one thing, but when you're giving class, it's so much harder to fall asleep. But if your mind wanders, it's too obvious. But this is what Prabhupada wants to tell us. All such forms of the Lord are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, and there should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees always engaged in material wranglings. Now, what do you find interesting about that sentence? I'll read it again. Ready? Ready? All such forms of the Lord are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, and there should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees always engaged in material wranglings. You find anything interesting in there? Anyone? Raise your hand, please, if you found something interesting in there. Yes.
I was hearing a lecture of Gaurangpur, my brother, and he was mentioning this point that the non-devotees essentially are besotted with the fact that they are the supreme controllers and judges. When they come and see that the deity is worshipped so opulently, then the reference point shifts in their mind. This person must be someone very special.
Thank you. Any other points on that? What causes the burning in material existence? This is actually so hard to accept this point, but what causes the burning? Definitely envy, and but it's all based on material attachment and false ego wanting to be the center, and we just can't have what we want in the material world. We can't have everything. So therefore we're envious and we burn with these things because it's due to our material attachments that we haven't been able to extract ourselves from material existence. We're entangled. Our sense of self is entangled in matter. And therefore when something happens on the material level that's unpleasant, we burn and we think it's us, it's happening to us. And on the other hand, devotees, they don't identify with matter at all. They identify with being with Krishna. I am Krishna's. Their sense of self, who am I? I am Krishna's. Jivera Surupoi Krishnair Nitya, eternally. I am always past, present, future. I am Krishna's. And they place themselves under the kind disposition of Krishna. They, whatever Krishna, I'm his. He can do with me as he likes. Just like I know a Chinese exercise I've learned where you go like this. I can tell you why. It's not just to give yourself trouble, but it's to get the circulation moving in these meridians and these joints, because they tend to get clogged like that. You do it in the different joints in different parts of the body. So my hand never complains. Why are you doing this to me? You know, I'm your hand. You know, why I had a different plan for you. I have soft gloves and this and that. Why are you doing this and why are you doing that? No, it just accepts what the master. And it knows that I'm gonna, when it gets too red or too, I'll stop. Something like that. So the idea is the devotee has a full identification. His consciousness is fully given to Krishna. And it's in that way it's extracted from material existence. He identifies with Krishna as his. So if you consider the difference between a non-devotee and a devotee like that, and anyone who doesn't have that full surrender, that full pure surrender, anyabilasita sanyam gyana kama anavrita, is maybe aspiring to be a devotee, but he's still living in the land of Maya. This consciousness is basically absorbed in the land of Maya. So that's what struck me about this. There should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees who are engaged in material wrangling. So what? That's a term that you don't hear very much nowadays, material wranglings. What does material wranglings mean, that term that Prabhupada used? Excuse me? On the material realm, just the wranglings means the interactions, and you're in it and you struggle. It means like struggle. Someone must be able to look this up now with our intelligent devices.
Come up. Intense argument.
Yeah. Intense argument and struggle. So what is going on in the mind continuously? It is this. It's struggling with the material nature. Continuously. I want this. I don't want this. This person said this to me. Tomorrow I'm going to say this to him. On and on. Relentlessly. So it's not like the non-devotees of those people out there. And on this level, there's people who are not really absorbed in Krishna. The temple is such a shelter, because when we're in here, in this room with its soothing atmosphere, with a very kind, would you like to sit here? It might be a little easier for you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. With its soothing, it's fragrant, it's clean. The temple should be very sattvic, very clean. The most important thing, clean, and that people can come in front of the deities, from in front of our Sisi Gornatai, and be this, just by seeing them, it's like you walk in the temple room and it's shocking almost, because you don't, there's no one dressed like this out in the world. You come in here. And it's so colorful, and they're so beautiful, and the flowers, and the jewelry, and everything is so delicate, and the choice of colors today is just so outstanding, and it comes into the consciousness. Like, look at Mahaprabhu's blue turban and Nittai's yellow turban, and it's just so. And they've changed their. The exchange of colors between Gaura and Nittai, and Radhabalava and the pink, and Jagannath with a huge smile, and the consciousness is, as Prabhu was saying, is so deeply affected just by seeing them. So when the eyes are affected in this way, then gradually, and the atmosphere is so soothing and fragrant with the incense and the flowers that are offered, and Tulsi Devi is here, and everything is pleasing, and the sounds are very pleasing, then the consciousness becomes soothed, because from our burning attention and wranglings on the material level that continuously afflict us. So the Artha Vigraha is Krishna's mercy, because we can't ascend easily to the spiritual realm. We can by the mercy of the holy names, by the mercy of the Bhagavatam, by the mercy of the deities. But here's the deities have descend, and the Prabhupada gave that description of Gobadakshai Vishnu, and the Artha Vigraha is an incarnation of Gobadakshai Vishnu, somewhat technical description. He's come for us. That's the point. To give us a facility
to on one level be free from the burning material consciousness, and on another level to uplift our consciousness to thinking about him and her and their pastimes and the activities of the spiritual realm, which are actually pleasing to the heart. While on the other hand, the very nature of the material realm is that the activities they give, they offer the anticipation, the promise of giving pleasure to the heart, but they deliver ashes. Simply ashes. The promise is a sweet and the delivery is ashes. That's very poetic, isn't it? As poetic as the lotus flowers. But anyway, let's hear what else the Prabhupada says. Now he's going to change. I'll read that sentence again and hear it from that point of view. All such forms of the Lord are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers. Here it's carnations, I believe. And there should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees. Their attention is burning because it's being focused on the material realm. And this is so hard to accept. It must burn. There is no adjustment on the material level. There is no situation on the material level that can be free from misery. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, when one actually accepts this, and it's easy to accept it intellectually, or can be accepted intellectually easier. But when one actually accepts this point that there is no situation in the material world that can actually relieve the burning that is pleasurable. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avatarajana. That one, he said that one has one who has this, has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. A very heavy statement. Because because in our spiritual life we tend to to walk forward, try to walk forward and look backwards at the same time. Now everyone knows what happens when you're walking forward and looking backwards. Oh yes? Huh? What's going to happen?
Running into something.
Yes, you'll bang into the wall or something, or a car or something like that. But that's what we tend to do. We want to advance and go forward in our spiritual life. We sort of walk forward. But our consciousness tends to look backwards towards material life. And Krishna corrects us through the wall that we bang into. Yes, this is the nature of the material world. I should face where I'm going. I should put my intention and my actions, line up my life, my consciousness, my whole life, so I'm moving forward. We're different individuals with different stages of advancement and different needs. But we want to, each according to our capacity and situation, line up our lives so that we're moving forward slowly or quickly, depending upon what our capacity is. And we want to get the job done before it's time for us to leave this world. We want to, and what's the quote, job? What do we need to get accomplished before we leave this world? Is that we have to transfer our attachment, our entanglement, so to speak, from our sense of self, from the realm of matter to the realm of Golok Vrindavan, to the spiritual world. We want to develop our attachment to Krishna, in other words. We want to become entangled, our consciousness to become entangled in his pastimes, his activities, in pleasing him. We want our consciousness to become entangled in his pleasure, and that he'll, if he so desires, he'll kindly put his merciful glance upon me. Prabhupada continues, the meditators, because he's talking about the, just talked about the Archa Vigraha, but now the meditators worship a form within the mind. Therefore, so that's very interesting. I mean, even if we're not full-time meditators, we all, everyone is meditating all the time. But what we're meditating on isn't always the best thing to be meditating on. But that means that Krishna accepts the forms of Him that we place within our mind. And there's this wonderful commentary by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur that describes how that even if we try to meditate on Krishna in our mind, and we're not really, we haven't perfected that, and we don't, we're getting happiness thinking, oh, this is Krishna, because we're looking, we look at Radha Vallabha right now, we look at Gaunatayana, and we take their forms and place them in their mind, but because of our lack of purity or bhakti or desire, Krishna doesn't fully manifest Himself. Where is the cow ring when we need it? Mataji, does anyone have cow rings that they can distribute freely throughout the world?
Oh,
huh? There you go, you have one customer right here. Anyone can distribute a cow ring? That Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that even if we don't, when from our side, we don't have the software capacity to, we don't have the ability to download the full Krishna, he doesn't take it like that. He doesn't take it, oh, this is negative, what's he doing? He's not pure enough or anything. He thinks my devotee is trying to meditate on me, and we get some and that's the reciprocation we get. That Krishna actually manifests Himself according to our capacity out of His kindness. Despite our lack, He sees our attempt and He reciprocates with that. At any time, at any place, this is wonderful. This is His kindness. His unlimited kindness. He sees the good, the attempt, the sincerity. So Srila Prabhupada continues. Therefore, the Lord is merciful even to the women sujas and dvija bandhus, provided they agreed to visit the temple of worship in different forms made for them. Such temple visitors are not idolaters, as alleged by some men with a poor fund of knowledge. So Prabhupada is the religions of the Middle East think like this, but also there's the I didn't mention the group, but there's some groups in India who also think there's no need for temple worship, God is everywhere. Not even Prabhupada responded to that, to saying, if He's everywhere, why isn't He in the temple? He's more easily accessible here than other places, even though He is everywhere, undoubtedly. And not only don't they acknowledge that, they won't even go to the temple. So why are they boycotting a place where Krishna is if God is everywhere? All the great acharyas established such temples of worship in all places just to favor the less intelligent. And one should not pose himself as transcending the stage of temple worship while one is actually in the category of the sudra and the women or less. One should begin, now here's another instruction, how to see him. Now see if you can, I'll read it through and won't say anything and then I'll finish the purport. But I'm going to ask you to comment on this and what's the essence of advice that Prabhupada is giving here. Ready to listen?
Yes.
Ready? Aditya Prabhu? Ready? Okay. One should begin to see the Lord from His lotus feet, gradually rising to the thighs, waist, chest, and face. One should not try to look at the face of the Lord without being accustomed to seeing the lotus feet of the Lord. Srimati Kunti. So there's the first part, and now how this applies to Kunti Devi, because she doesn't start with the lotus feet here. So this contradicts with what Prabhupada says. She starts with the abdomen. She sees Krishna beginning with the abdomen. And then the last thing she says is the lotus feet. So Prabhupada is explaining a principle here. And the principle is one should see the Lord from the lotus feet. So I'd like to discuss that, and then we'll hear what Kunti's, Prabhupada's explanation of Kunti's prayer and how Kunti is seeing the Lord. Srimati Kunti, because of her being the aunt of the Lord, did not begin to see the Lord from the lotus feet because the Lord might feel ashamed. And thus Kunti Devi, just to save a painful situation for the Lord, began to see the Lord just above his lotus feet from the waist of the Lord, gradually rising to the face and then down to the lotus feet. In the round, everything there is in order. Did you hear that? 2 points. One is the general principle, and then how that principle is applied to Kunti Devi. So first, let's talk about the general principle. I'll read it again. One should begin to see the Lord from his lotus feet, gradually rising to the thighs, waist, chest, and face. One should not try to look at the face of the Lord without being accustomed to see the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, what is the meaning of that? Is this just a ritual? Is this just the way things are done in a certain part of the world, in a certain culture? What's the significance of that? Why should one first begin to see the Lord beginning from his lotus feet? And why one shouldn't go see him first from the face? Why? Raise your hands, please, if you'd like to respond. Because we should read with an active intelligence and try to understand what Prabhupada is saying. So we call on Father or Son there. Both raise their hand. We shall give deference to the Father. Yes.
Humility.
Yes. Thank you. Humility. But why is it humble to look at his feet first, not his face?